Time for breakfast.
Trauma for Breakfast is a crowded table of wounded children, parents, spouses, caregivers, and weary souls. Together, we join in honest conversations about the behaviors and challenges of parenting and working with children who have experienced trauma. There's always room for one more at the table to share in the stories, science, and healing as we learn to better understand and care for each other. We are a table without shame or judgment, because life can be hard and lonely, and we all know that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I'm Stacy. I'm a mother of 7 children and have fostered for over 13 years. As an RN and former public school teacher, I quickly realized this type of parenting was not taught in a textbook or class. Let's learn together to parent different, not harder. Welcome to Trauma for Breakfast. Good morning, everybody out there, and welcome to Trauma for Breakfast. I am your host, Stacy Gagnon, and today on our show, we have really cool people. I'm just going to say that. I'm sitting across from them, which always makes it so much easier to do an interview. And so I would like to welcome Shaylee and Tanya. Shaylee Bell is a young mom of 2, and she is going to be having a baby in 4 months. But Shaylee is going to tell us some pretty incredible stuff, so you're going to want to hold on and hear her story. But I'm also with me is Tanya Clark. Tanya Clark is the owner of Sesame Sober Living. She has 25 women right now who she is supporting. What should I add to your bio?
I'm probation contracted, Yavapai County probation contracted. I'm ASRA certified. I'm state licensed, and I'm blessed to have all those women.
That's awesome. And what started you on that road to starting a sober living home?
I think at the time it was a survival tactic because I had so many felonious charges on my record that I was kind of led in that direction. And I was actually in several sober livings, and it just happened. I thought, well, I can do it better than this one and this one. And then God dropped the opportunity right in my lap.
So you had already experienced living in sober living? And give me some background on that.
I've been a meth user for 34 years. That entailed a lot of hurt. I hurt everybody pretty much that I loved and that loved me. I've been to prison. Up until my prison sentence, I really didn't know there was anything called the program, meaning AA, NA, and the steps, or God, for that matter. So I went to prison, got out, relapsed, got on probation again, and I was mandated to 2 different sober livings, both of which helped me in their own way. And I just had a knack to help women. I found myself when the women would come in. The last sober living I stayed at, I was there 5 months, and I fell in love with helping these women because I could relate to everything they were going through. And in that, I was able to help them be strong, encourage them. And so that's how I fell into sober living. And then I was on SSI, okay? I was born with scoliosis and kyphosis. So just after I got out of prison, I took on a janitorial job that was willing to hire me. I worked really hard. I ended up paralyzing myself, stripping and waxing floors. I was paralyzed for about a year. During that time frame, I did get surgery, and obviously I'm walking again. I got on Social Security. $735 a month wasn't enough for me. I was sick of waiting on a check. There was so much more. So when and let me jump ahead again to the sober living. I graduated the last sober living. I moved out on my own, if you will. I found somebody that was willing to not run a background check, but to just know that I had integrity and I was a changed person. Him and his wife not only rented to me, but they ended up offering me this property with 4 houses on it. So it fell in my lap. Everything that I have going for me just came easy. And I just found it to be amazing.
You know, I look at that, I'm like, you say it came easy. And I think I see the hard you've gone through in life to get to that point. I mean, statistically, 34 years of a meth addiction is not something that people are just going to be able to stop. And so was there a moment or a story or something that happened that really, I mean, because it sounded like there were, you did well, you relapsed, you did well, you relapsed. What was that change for you?
Honestly, I think part of me just aged out of it. More so, I was handed a 35-year sentence plea the last time I was in jail. Pretty much this town was done with me. I was a menace. So at that point, I was in the courtroom. I just prayed. I hit my knees and I prayed and I said, this can't be it. And I was shackled up in the Prescott courthouse, and every single one of my children, well, not my boys, they don't live here, but all three of my girls, my mom and my father and my brother were sobbing because I was going to be sentenced to 35 years in prison. And that was the moment I thought, please, God, just, I promise, help me. And my mom, crying, liked the lawyer that was currently, had another case. She liked the way he was defending this person, you know, that was up at the podium, and there I am shackled in the uncomfortable chair. My mom got up and ran out of the courtroom, and that's why I sit here today, him and God and my mom and dad.
So your parents fought for you year after year.
I was in a body cast my entire 18 years, my whole growing up. I think my body cast was actually put on at 2 months old. My mom never stopped fighting for me and my dad. Never.
And what age were you when you started?
Started using meth?
Or alcohol or anything like that?
I went right from getting my body cast off to going crazy. Because before I didn't leave the house, I was that kid that, you know, self-esteem issues, right? Never really fit in. My sister and brother were older. I didn't really have a good relationship with them. And, you know, so it was basically just my mom and my dad and me all the time. I got my body cast off at 18, and all of a sudden, the world was before me. And that's when I started smoking pot with my best friend. You know how it goes. And drinking, and it was all body issue. I started doing meth because I was fat. And so I started taking Dexatrim. I don't know if anybody remembers that back in the day. Shaylee, you're too...
I'm too young.
Young for it. Could buy it at the Vons, and you know, I could buy it at the Vons grocery store or the drugstore. Started taking Dexatrim, loved the feeling, lost weight. That stopped working, and I started taking crosstops. Little white pills with little crosstops. It's speed. And that was in, God, I was about 18 or 19 by then. And then I couldn't get those anymore, so my best friend and I started going to the diet doctor and giving us diet pills. And then those stopped working. That's when I found meth. Yep, I found meth and I didn't stop. I didn't know how.
And so, and then through that time period, you have five children?
I have five children. Frankie was born in 1991. Kevin was born in 1993. Sabrina was born in 1994. Angelique was born in 1995. And Nancy Marie was born in 1997, and I was high all through it.
And then you said you had DCS involvement. What did that look
Several
like?
Several times. The first time was the worst. And they told me to stop doing drugs, and so I did. So I would get my kids back. I would stop doing drugs. I would do everything they asked me to do. And then I would relapse again. I'd never been told there was a program. I'd never been told that there was a meeting. I never once was told the whole time that there were people like me that could help me until I came to Yavapai County.
And you joined at that time. Well, talk about the Yavapai Reentry Project and what you understand about that being a program for women and for men.
Because I was in prison and I got out, I worked with AWE. I don't know if anybody remembers. AWE, Arizona Women's Education and Employment. They introduced me to the Yavapai Reentry. And that was back in 2010 when I got out of prison. And they helped me get clothes. And I don't remember the lady's name, but she was awesome. I was doing great. And I actually got an award for a face of success from Matt Forrest Yavapai Reentry in 2011. Probably 2 months later, I relapsed. And that's when I got in trouble again.
Walk us through that, because I've seen that happen a lot where it's like, we'll see someone that is in recovery and doing so amazing. And at that pinnacle moment, of, oh, you know, recognition and things. And then it's just this, the relapse you're talking about. I've seen that occur. Can you talk or speak to that?
Mine was always stemmed around not being enough. And this is going to sound horrible, but every single time I got my children back, everything was great. But I still didn't, I always had that thought, is this what it's supposed to feel like? Is this all there is? Because you spend so many, you know, sometimes I spend a year and a half trying so hard to get my children back and working, and you have that goal in mind. And then you get them back and your entire support system is gone. They have behaviors because they've been ripped away from you because, I mean, I did it. I have nobody to blame but myself. And I had no tools, zero tools, unlike Yavapai County.
I love how you say that about not having tools and that everyone goes away, because I see that within our system where children go home and then what happens is everyone leaves, and all of a sudden we're shocked and surprised when the mom is struggling by herself, right? And yet at the same time, I think a mom in that situation would be afraid to say, I am struggling, help me. Because she just got her kids back and did it under the guise that I can do this. But every mom struggles. Every mom struggles, but even more so a mom that is in this situation. And so I just to give everyone a background, the Yavapai Reentry Project is a program that provides community coaches or mentors to women and men when they leave incarceration so that they're supported by someone as they re-enter community. It's a community wraparound. And I think what is key in the program is that it's volunteer-based. It is not paid. And so it is volunteer community members who want to support men and women through relationships and community connections. Because when you think about reentry, for a lot of incarcerated people, I heard you speaking about being able to get a job. Like it is impossible for a felon to get a job. And so you have that support. And so you are here as what was once a participant and who is now a coach. And so tell us about when your children came home the last time.
When I got out of county jail.
So how many times did they go into the system? I guess that would be...
Into the system 3 times. When I went to prison, they went with family back east, my sister. And then my 3 oldest went back to California with their father's family. This last time, I've blocked a lot of it out. Yeah. You got to be strong. That's when I was on my way. I mean, I'd done really well. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd gotten the award. This was in 2011. I was becoming paralyzed for about 7 months before it actually happened because my vertebrae collapsed and my bone fragments went into my spine. So I was in excruciating pain. And I had just gotten my children back. I mean, I just did it. I could do it all on my own, you know? And my parents had already done so much, right? I had it all. I had 2 phones, 2 cars. I was managing this company by then that didn't hire felonious people or smokers, and I was both. So I was killing the game, and I was a good example. But I just didn't know when to stop. I was in pain. To kill my pain, it was meth. I can't take pain pills, heroin, anything like that. It makes me throw up. I had the 3 girls, and I didn't want to ask for help. I'd already depleted my resources by that point. Right? We'd moved back out of my parents again for the 7th time. Everybody was pretty sick of me. So I just thought I have to keep going. And lo and behold, I couldn't. I went from doing basalts, which really wasn't basalts. They sold it up here up the street. It was legal because it was a little bit like meth, but not all the bad stuff. To straight to meth. And once I start doing meth, I lose all control. I'm erratic. I can't hold down a job. My ex-boyfriend got out of prison, and that was it. You know, I ended up getting in trouble again with him. As soon as I had my back surgery, that's when I got in trouble for the last time.
And then at that point in your story, you were talking about your sentencing and what sentence did you receive?
I was looking at about 35 years in prison.
Wow. And so then at what point, or that point, what path did you set on? Because you weren't going back. And so what did you surround yourself with, or what did you do to stay on track?
That's when I was mandated to sober living, to get out of jail, right then. And I finally belonged somewhere again.
So tell me three things in your sober living houses that are different than other sober living houses.
Sure. My three priorities are that my women feel safe, that they are greeted with love and tolerance and principles before personalities, which is the mainstay of AA.
So explain to our audience what principle before personalities means.
So let's say one female was in jail with another, and that other one happened to maybe tell on her, or had sex with her boyfriend, or stole from her while they were out there using together. I run into this scenario all the time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The newcomer is the most important. It doesn't matter what they've ever done their whole life. They've crossed the threshold to change, and nobody is allowed to ever treat them poorly again, use it against them, put a principle of a situation or a personality conflict before the principle of she's starting over, she's in my house, she's safe. We're going to be loving and tolerant with her no matter what. And it works.
It's really incredible what your policies or what your principles are, because so much of it mirror my home when we were bringing in foster children. And it is that met safety and those principles and that security and the tolerance and understanding that behavior is communication. And so many of those kids and so many of the adults that you work with are communicating from pretty painful and dark places. Tanya, can you speak to that woman that is sitting in that loss or that grief of, okay, my kids are in DCS care and I'm struggling to stay clean, or I'm struggling with one more time I've relapsed, or what? Can you share just what would you say to that woman?
I would tell her she needs to get up, start doing the work, because many times these women's children have already been adopted out. It's not a loss. You get up, you do the work, you start recovering, you work, you save money, you have faith, you pray, because they will be back. Nobody can keep your children from you forever. God gave them to you. And if God sees fit, they will be back in your life. It's like a timeout. You're in timeout. During timeout, I want you to go find a great career, go to school, and have a house, and be something that when they come looking for you, because they will, they are proud of.
I love the beauty of that statement that this is a timeout, because I look at my children and a part of them, the hugest part of them is their parent, their biological parents. And I know you look at the industry of finding loved ones or finding your parents or, and it is a humongous industry because people, that is, they know you on an intimate level. Pregnancy is an intimate level to know someone. So even adoption from the womb is absolutely a loss for a child. And one of the things I like to share with the inmates that I do work with, one thing I wish for my children that I've adopted, I would love nothing more for them to have letters from them saying, I thought about you, or I cared about you. And I do let those men and women know where they've been told they can't contact their children. Then you save those letters, write them on their birthday and say, you'll be 9 today. I think about you every day. Because in the back of my children's minds is that desire to know, did my mom and dad love me, or is there something so wrong with me that gave me away? And so I battle that every day with my children, and that they understand and know that they were loved by their biological parents. They were not in a place to care for them. And I like the word timeout, because yes, that is a timeout, because we parent across the lifespan. We don't parent to the age of 18. And children can have more than one set of parents. I always talk about their biological parents. And for those that are listening, never, ever, ever speak down about the biological parent, because that is a piece of your child. And so I appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate you saying, get yourself to a space where when they do come to find you, you'll be able to say, oh, I've been waiting for you.
Look at all I did. Why I didn't have you.
Yep. I've been waiting for you. And if you were able to write those letters to say, look, I have this box and it's proof I thought about you every year on your birthday. I thought about you in holidays. You know, I put together this box for you. And it makes me almost want to cry, because I want that for my my children, because I feel like there is that missing piece for them that I will never be able to fill. So thank you for saying that. And can you also tell me one piece of advice that you have? If you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice to that 17-year-old, what would that be?
Wow, that's a tough one. You got me. I would have to say that it's true. It's true. You are enough. They do love you. You don't need to run. You have acceptance. Stay.
Well, I'm going to end on so because we're all trying not to cry right now. Let me end on one thing I always love to ask guests on the show. Is there a book you're reading right now? And it doesn't even have to be, it can just be, you know, anything interesting. It doesn't have to be work related. It could just be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember the title of it. It was a book that was given to me by one of my alumni's mother about stories of people, men, women that are in prison, their life stories. And I can get back to you with the name, but it's incredible.
That would be great. I would love to hear that. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Trauma for Breakfast. And we will see you for part two of Hope in Hard Places. We're so thankful that you all shared in today's conversation. We are always here and ready to set one more place at the table. Thanks for joining us on Trauma for Breakfast.
The book title referred to by Tanya in today's podcast is The Key to Your Expected End by author Katie Souza. Trauma for Breakfast is brought to you and supported by MatForce, working together to reduce substance abuse, and Yavapai County Community Health Services, working toward healthier communities.